I'm Carol, grateful compulsive eater. I'm from Norman, Oklahoma, and my abstinence date is May 24th, 2012, and I've released 50 pounds. So thank you. So, step four, relief in finally facing ourselves, which is about made a searching and fearless inventory of ourselves. In the wee hours of the morning, in a room far, far away, a very sad woman got ready to go to bed. She was pretty stressed. She'd been training 85 kindergarten teachers for 3 days. Anybody in here, raise your hand if you're a teacher. Wow. Anybody in here a kindergarten teacher? Preschool. And the longer I'm a former teacher, so the longer I've done that, the more I think kindergarten, pre-K teachers are the most important, that great foundation. And I had just been training 85 kindergarten teachers at one time in one room for 3 days. I was exhausted. And with 85 teachers, there were 85 questions. This was 3 years ago, and I remember going to bed that night. I would stay up very, I was constantly tweaking my presentation, and I would stay up until 1 or 2 in the morning trying to make it just perfect, one of my defects, perfectionism. And then I'd get back up at 5 in the morning because I had to be at the site at 7:30 and then tweak my presentation some more to make sure, you guessed it, that it was perfect. And I remember my son, we have 2 grown sons, and I remember that it was his birthday. It was August 10th. I'd sent him his card, and I'd sent him a birthday gift, but I always called him. He lives in Houston, and we live in Norman, Oklahoma. And I was so distressed that I didn't call my son. He was fine. He'd gotten a card from me, and he'd gotten a gift from me, so he was okay, but I was not okay. So I remember when I went to bed that night, I said to my director and my colleague who was with me, right next door to me, I said to her, "Now, if I don't wake up in the morning, don't come and get me." I had begun to take sleeping pills because I was so stressed. Teaching is so stressful. You're always on. You're never off. People think that it's a 9-month out of the year job, and those of us who are teachers know that it once you hit your hit the ground running in August, you don't stop until the end of May, and then you sit and stare for a whole long time after that. So I was exhausted, and I said to her, "Don't come and get me for breakfast. If I'm not there, go on without me." We've known each other for about 10 years. We work very closely together, and so that alarmed her. I had begun to take sleeping pills because I was in lots of hotels, lots of days, lots of nights. From Friday, I'd leave on Sunday night and get back on Friday night. And so I was exhausted, and I began to take sleeping pills because of all the different noises and different beds and different hotels. And so that frightened her. So that was the beginning of my story. I had told her that. I had told my friend that a long time ago, and she really didn't quite get it because I was always a pretty upbeat and happy person. But that alarmed her. I remember that I tried to tell my father, and I think I'd begun to get really depressed, but I didn't know it. And my religious faith told me that if I would just pray about it, my father said, it'll be okay. But I was really going downhill fast. I knew it because every time I'd go out of town, I cried. And I told my father, who is still living, he's 82. I told my dad, who lives in Independence, Missouri. I said, "Dad, I'm depressed, and I think I want to take my own life." My mother passed away about 5 years ago, and he said, "You won't do it. Your religious faith won't allow you to do that." So I told my dad, who is again a very upbeat person. I didn't tell my husband, whom I've been married to for 43 years. Because I was never home to talk to him. And when I was home, I would say to him, he's very soft-spoken, very calm, very deliberate, very analytical. And I said to him, "Hurry up. tell me whatever it is you've got to tell me, because I've got another gig to get ready for. And truly, I was present physically, but I wasn't present emotionally and mentally. And so that, of course, shut him down. And then in the next breath, the next night, I would say to him, you know, Bob, you never talk to me anymore. And poor guy, he couldn't win. So he didn't even know how bad I was, and because I just didn't have a chance to talk to him. And when I was home, I was pretty, upbeat. I just did what I had to do to get going. So he didn't know. So I told my friend. And you know, step four says, let's read that together, shall we? Step four, ready, read. Once we have a complete willingness to take inventory and exert ourselves to do the job thoroughly, a wonderful light falls upon this foggy state. We persist, a brand new kind of confidence is born, and the sense of relief at finally facing ourselves is indescribable. These are the first fruits of step four. And that's from the 12 by 12. And so I realized through doing my inventory that resentment, you know, perfection is one of my many defects, but resentment was my number one defect. And I had congratulated myself when I completed my 170 questions, and I thought, oh, man, I'm done. I'm done. It's out of me. I've gotten rid of it. I'm good to go. And, of course, we know I wasn't good to go. But this one says, resentment is the number one offender. Oh, my goodness. It destroys more alcoholics. That's what the printed literature says. And we would say compulsive eaters, or substitute that in our verbiage, than anything else. From it stem all form of spiritual disease. For we have not only been physically and mentally ill, we have also been spiritually ill. And I was spiritually ill. When our spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with our resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry, and in most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships were hurt or threatened. And in my case, I realized that I was afraid. I was resentful, number one, of my director who sent me all over the place to train teachers. I was resentful of the institution, the corporate institution for whom I worked, for making me do my job. I knew when I hired on I had to travel 4 days a week, ended up five, but I knew it was four. And I was resentful for the principal that I had to do it when I could see around me others in my company weren't having to do it. And so I was having a little bit of a pity party. So I was resentful on all three levels. As I began to do my inventory, I began to realize that I had had an early schooling in the school of resentment. My mother never, God rest her soul, who was wonderful in many ways, did I realize that the root of my resentment and the foundation of my schooling happened when I was like 9, 10 years old. My mother was 15 when she had me. She came from a small town in Missouri. She was the valedictorian of her 8th grade class. My father was older. He was 19. But my mother realized she was pregnant with me at 14. She and my father married each other. They were married 58 years until my mother passed away. I have two other sisters. I never once felt not wanted. Never once felt not wanted. But let me tell you about resentment. My mother would say to me, Carol, if it weren't for you, I could have been. And you know what? I really, and maybe I've blocked it, but I really remember her saying that to me once. I was sweeping the kitchen, because the other thing my mother would say when I'd say I'm bored, my mother would say, here's the broom or here's the duster. You choose. You know, you have to make yourself happy. So there were lots of good things too. But she said, if it weren't for you, I could have been. I could have had. I could have become. That message was so deep and so painful to even uncover. So later, that was my first experience that I didn't even uncover until I began to do my inventory. Later, my mother said, I remember I was the first president of our junior high class, first girl president and the first president of our student council since 1929 when our school was built. And I remember running and my father helping me with it. My father, who is a former farmer, had said, you can be anything you want to be. The cream always rises to the top, blah, blah, blah. And my mother said to me, I guess they were complete opposites. Now, Carol, when you don't get it, don't be disappointed. I got it anyway. Then my mother said, I got nominated for Outstanding Senior Girl in high school, all high school stuff. And my mother said, now, Carol, when you don't get it, don't be disappointed. And I got it anyway. Those things I had not thought about. It's high school, for 40 years ago. Hadn't thought about it for years. And then when I decided to go to college, I went a couple of years, and then I married my husband, who was my high school sweetheart. We went away to college and dated lots of other people and realized that we had a pretty good thing. We've been married 43 years now. And so my mother said to me, she pulled me aside, and she said, now, Carol, you're marrying him, and you're not finished with college yet. She said, don't you think you'll resent him because he's going on to college and you're not? So there was, and I said, no, absolutely not. But there was that other resentment. And so then I graduated from college, even when my mom said, don't be disappointed when you don't, and I did it anyway. And so when I married my husband, you can see my 1971 picture there. when I married him, my mother said, are you sure you won't be resentful when you marry him because of the things that you're not, you know, that you're giving up? And later I've realized that she was really mirroring and talking about her own life. That was her experience. Even though she said, I don't resent and I don't regret, she never said those words to me. I don't regret marrying young. I resent your father. She never said those things to me. But now I realize it was her putting her own stuff onto me. So that was 43 years ago, and then that was a couple of years ago. We're still married at 43 years and two sons and seven grandchildren, so it's been really good. So this was just to tell you a little bit about my training background. I traveled to 25 of the 50 states 5 days a week, really 6 days a week by the time I would leave on Sunday and get home on Friday. I went to Alaska with my job. I went from East Coast to West Coast. I went to Puerto Rico with my job. I would train kindergarten through 12th grade teachers in literacy and in numeracy. So I went all over, and often within one state, I would be in three different corners of the state, and I was exhausted. One time, I remember coming home from the airport, and I was so tired that I fell, you know, in the revolving glass doors, I fell and banged my head so hard with my suitcases. You know, I was trying to get both suitcases through, and I banged my head so hard that it knocked me out. And then that's when I started to take the sleeping pills and that kind of thing. So, and I cried a lot. In my hotel room, I cried. I cried to my friend all the time. I just cried. And I remember saying to her, I'm so unhappy. I'm so unhappy. As I said, my husband didn't see me cry because I was never with him. Okay. And so I remember that one day in the hotel room, I decided I am in too much pain. I'm going to take my own life. And I remember that we had just remodeled our home. And I remember our grandchildren's pictures are all across the hallway upstairs. And I looked at each of them. I looked at Ariana. I looked at Anne-Marie. I looked at Joaquin. I looked at Lane. I looked at Channing. I looked at Warner. And I looked at Keller. And I said, I'm no good to me. I can't be any good to them. I looked at my two wonderful sons, who are wonderful fathers because of their wonderful father. And I thought, they're better off without me. Everybody's just better off without me. I'm so sad. I hurt so much. I can find no relief. And I just need to end it all. And you know, I've been a child of God always, but officially proclaimed that when I was 8 years old. So I had a faith, but it wasn't the personal faith that I came to know when I came in to see Hal. And so I prayed, but I never knew it was okay to pray for help with my eating and my disease and my addiction. I really thought that my God was too busy and that I should be able to take care of this myself on my own. And so I thought he was so busy fighting wars and dealing with famine that he just didn't have time for me. So my friend, the same one who was in the hotel with me, began to go to something called a 12-step meeting. It was CHOW. I'd never been in a 12-step meeting. I had no idea what she was talking about. But because I had gone to my doctor in between this, she had told me, don't go back to work, my friend did, until you get some help. She called my husband behind my back to tell me how sick I was, which, as I said, he didn't know. So when I went to the doctor, I found that I was moderately to severely depressed. So I've never seen my doctor, whose children I had in my classes, I've never seen her move so fast and get me help and get me counseling and get me medication. And so anyway, my friend came over, and I was home all that time. And so she'd come over, and we'd go out on my deck, and she'd bring her abstinent food for lunch, and I'd eat my lunch, and we'd sit on the deck, and we'd watch the flowers and listen to the birds and just talk and reconnect. And I didn't notice, after about 3 months, a weight loss, although I'm sure she was losing weight. But I noticed the look in her eyes, and I noticed this unmitigated joy that she had and the change in her life that she had. And I was attracted to that. I wanted that. So I went to my first meeting, and she was so surprised that I showed up. But I showed up because I wanted to be there. And so I began to work through my steps. I'm a full-service sponsor, and I began at that time. I was working on my inventory after a while, and I began to realize my resentment history. And I began to, I talked to my sponsor, and my sponsor said, remember, I resented people, institutions, and principles, all three of them. People, institutions, I resented all that. All right, so as I was working through it, I this time talked to my sponsor, and my sponsor said, as the big book says, you need to pray for those people that you resent the same things that you would pray for yourself. Even when you're just saying the words, even when you don't really mean it, you just need to continue to pray. And that was a huge help. And so I began to do that. Not necessarily that this particular individual changed. Maybe she did, but I changed. I changed. My heart changed. And so I prayed for her. I've prayed for me. I prayed for her the same things I wanted for me. And I prayed to God, prayed for help with my food, which I had never done before. And I've been in weight reduction programs probably since I was 17. So I prayed for that kind of help and worked my questions. And God sent me a dream. He really sent me a dream, and I believe in dreams, and I believe that's the way that my higher power speaks to me. And in my dream, I was in a bathtub. I was soaking, and there were lots of bubbles. And I remember that as I laid my head back, I put my hands on the floor of the tub, and I began to feel shiny, barb-like things. Kind of imagine jacks. They scintillated with brightness, and they were spiky and sharp. And as I laid my hands down, I drew my own bathwater, of course, and so I knew I had put nothing in there like that. And as I laid my hands down, I pulled these spikes up in the handfuls. And when I looked at them, they were shiny and bright, not rusted. And I was given to know that those were my resentments. And that because of the work I was doing, that those were not my old resentments anymore. They were still in my body, new resentments. But I was, because I had tools now, I was not allowing those resentments in the form of spikes fester and rust and be in my body for a long time. Now I had a means about which to get them out. And that was really prophetic to me because, as I said, once I did my inventory, I thought, thank you, God, I'm done. You know, I'd never been in CHOW before, and so I thought, I'm cured, right? Set myself up for the fall. And I realized all the time, even now, the resentments. I even have gone back and realized now it went back to my grandmother, my mother's mother, that I had messages from when I was a little tiny girl. And so it's been powerful to number one, recognize them, because before I didn't recognize them. And then number two, to have tools to be able to get them up and out of my body and to be aware when they come in now, because they still do. Somebody will push me in the corner or push me too far or make me do something I don't want to do. And I feel this just bubbling up inside of me, this resentment. So I'm still working. So that those wee hours of the morning, that woman who wanted to escape the pain and the hurt and the sorrow, did not take those pills, but instead had a friend who was, in fact, in CHOW, and a friend who loved her enough to say, you can't come back to train those 85 kindergarten teachers on Monday. And in fact, do you need a ride to the ER? Because I'm going to take you. And of course, I said, no, I'm fine. I'll soldier on. I'm fine. And she said, no, I don't think we'll have you back. We'll get somebody else to take your place. And then, as I said, behind my back, she called my husband, who was totally unaware. So that's my story of the resentment that I'm still working through. And as I really thought about that with my job, as you know, I was a teacher in Oklahoma, and we are the 49th lowest paid teachers in the nation. I think there's only one other state that's lower than we are. So when I went to work for my company, talk about my pocketbook or my self-esteem, they'd asked me to come work for them. So I took an early out for my teaching job, and the pay that they gave me was double what I was receiving as a teacher. Talk about turning my head. So when the resentment came up, it was like out of fear, I felt like I couldn't quit my job, that I was trapped because we had come to rely on that amount of income. So she didn't commit suicide. Oops. Okay. This was about my inventory. This was looking at myself as a young girl and an adolescent and an adult. And then let's read this together as well. So, ready, read.
Referring to our list, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Where were we to blame? When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. And I thought about this. The truth hurts. It was hard for me to say, I resent my mother. It was hard for me to do that. And in talking about my defects, I didn't want to look at them. I didn't want to face them. I didn't want to write them down in black and white and commit them to my sponsor and to God. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to see that evil. Didn't want to hear about it. I didn't want anybody to tell me that, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect anymore. You can let it go and let God. And I certainly didn't want to speak about it. The truth hurt. And in fact, the big book says it a lot better than I do. Resentment shuts us off from the light of the Spirit. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Because like in my case, just when I thought I'd gotten it after my first inventory, I didn't have it at all. So, how do you spell relief in finally facing ourselves? You spell it R-E-L-I-E-F. But let's look at each one of those individually. R, relief. It's the road to recovery, the beautiful road to recovery.
I've got it now. I faced myself. I want some relief. I couldn't stand to feel that pain anymore, or I was going to literally take my own life, which if somebody would have told me that 5 years ago, 4 years ago, I would have said, you're crazy. And that road to recovery is there. It's beautiful. We don't know what's at the end of that road. So it's about also that road to recovery. Instead of being a perfectionist, as is one of my character defects, I had to let go and trust God because I couldn't see what was at the end of that road. E, I love this one, the emotional sobriety, the peace, the serenity that came with that was incredible. And as the big book talks about, I had this relationship, but I went to God when I needed something. When I needed something. And I've learned through program to go to him every day and to do the inventory at the end of the night. Where have I done a good job? Where have I been kind today, Father? And I'll tell you, some days it's hard for me to find where I've been kind. And then on the other column, where have I fallen short? Where do I need to make amends? How can I do better? So that emotional sobriety and that physical and spiritual sobriety has been huge in recovery. And then living in the solution. I love this one, and I want to read you what it says in the big book on living in the solution. It's having literature, and it's writing for examination and release. It's telling God that you can have all of me, warts and all, no pretense. I can trust in your promises, that is, that your plan is better than my plan. And quote from the big book, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food. For by the time sanity will have returned, we will seldom be interested in overeating. I remember my friends, we'd be in the teacher's lounge, and my friends would say, I'm full. And I'd go, something's wrong with me. I don't get full. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward food has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. We're not fighting it, nor are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality. We're safe. We're protected. We've not sworn off. Instead, the problem has actually been removed. It doesn't exist for us. You know how people ask us, doesn't it bother you when you are around everybody eating certain foods, or how can you do this or that? It's just not my food. It's okay. It's not my food. That my higher power has taken that from me. It doesn't exist for us. We are neither cocky, nor are we afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. That is, my words, as long as we live in the solution. And that's from the big book, pages 84 and 85. So living in the solution, I love that. One day at a time, one meal at a time. I pray every day for willingness, just willingness to surrender. The I in relief is, it's an inside job. You know, even though I can look back and say, this is where my resentment started with my grandmother and particularly my mother, I don't blame my mother. Oh my gosh. She was a beautiful brown-eyed woman who loved me with every fiber of her being. And as I've come into program, I've realized she was 14. She was 14. Do you know, and she was from a small town, but do you know what she could have done? Instead of choosing to have me, she could have gone away and I could have been adopted. I'd still have a life, but it wouldn't be the same life. She could have decided to get rid of me at the risk of her own life, but she didn't. She married my father, loved my father, stayed together for 58 years. And so that inventory was mine. Not my mother's. It's an inside job for all of us. It allows us not to be a victim, but to be a victor. And that, again, is from the big book. The next E is economy. And I would have to say, if I were going to write about something right at this minute, it would be economy. Because let's read this together, too. Ready? Read.
In God's economy, nothing is wasted. Through failure, we learn a lesson in humility, which is probably needed, painful though it is.
So I've loved, as the Big Book tells us, to turn our darkness into light. I know with my experience of wanting to commit suicide, as I work with lots of teachers and administrators and just out in life, I am able to recognize when someone is going down the drain as I was going down the drain. And it allows me to be kinder and more empathetic. It allows me to listen better. And if I'd not had that experience, I wouldn't capture that. So I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I have a weight issue, because my life was trickling along pretty well, really. I mean, before that. But if I'd not had this, I would not have the deep personal relationship with my higher power that I now have. So I'm grateful for it. And F, finally, fearlessly facing ourselves. And I remember I should add forever. Because with all my other weight loss programs, I remember getting to goal, and then it was like, I can't wait. I've been so perfect. I've been so good. I can't wait to have a blank, blank chocolate bar. And so I said to my sponsor early on, before the 30 days were over, I said, now, does this mean I can't have a blank, blank forever? And she said, no. And I thought, oh, shoo, how good. She said, this is only as long as you want it. So that empowered me to have some choice in it. So forever, finally, fearlessly facing ourselves and having a solution, not just a quick fix. So relief, all the balloons and all of that. So the R, just to recap, relief in finally facing ourselves. E, the emotional sobriety. L, living in the solution. I, whose job is it? Inside job. E, economy. In God's economy, nothing is wasted. Don't you love that? That helps me so much all the time when I'm having a hard time and I have to stop and say, God, what is my lesson here? Help me learn from this experience. And F, fearlessly, finally, facing ourselves, and forever there too. So here's what I want you to do. This is your turn. I want you to think about, what defect did you uncover when you did your moral, fearless, and searching inventory? And maybe you're not at step four yet. But if you are, or if you, of course, will be, because that's what I loved about my sponsor. My sponsor gave me the timeline and the sequence so that I knew I needed to be of service, because I had to have this many years of abstinence and this much of years in service to be able to go on and on and on. I'm so grateful for that big picture. So what defect did you uncover? And I want you to write that defect down. And if you're like me, I have many. You know, two of mine are perfectionism and resentment. But write it down. And I want you to write down the progress you are making or that you've seen in your own life you made. And then we're going to do an activity, a fun activity, with a partner, but not just any partner. You'll see how we do that to process your writing. So your task right now is to list a defect that you've uncovered or that you've just realized. What you're doing, what progress you have been able to make toward that. I'll give you about 5 minutes just to write, and then to signal to me that you're ready. If you'll look at me, that will let me know you're ready to process the writing, and I'll time you for 5 minutes anyway. Questions on the activity?
So just list
just one, unique, just one, and how you're working on it. I wanted to pass around my pictures so that you could see me. I'm the one holding my first grandson right here in the middle, and then my other pictures from when I was teaching. All right. Thank you for responding to the writing. I appreciate that. All right, we're going to find, as the 12 by 12 says, we're going to find the shoe that fits. In fact, we're going to find a soulmate. But 12 by 12 says, sorry, that's hard to read. Having found the shoe that fit, he ought to step into them and with new confidence that he is at last on the right track. The 12 by 12. So you're going to find a soulmate as in shoe, not heart. So you're going to look for somebody in this room, and there are about 36 of us in here. So you're going to find somebody whose shoe style looks like your shoe style, or whose shoe color might match your shoe color. So you've got some options. Or whose shoe size looks like it could be your shoe size. When you go up to that person, if you choose to share your writing, nobody has to, but if you choose to, then you can share your writing and introduce yourselves if you don't know each other, of course, and you can say the one thing you were grateful for and then choose to share your writing. If you choose not to, that's okay. You can either talk about a gratitude or you can talk about stepping, how you are stepping up and see how. Questions on the activity. So you're finding a soulmate. Go. Tell your soulmate. That's a good note to end on. Tell your soulmate. Before you leave your soulmate, write your soulmate's name down and telephone number, contact information. We're going to do something else in just a minute, but just exchange your information. Then if you will navigate back towards your seats, please tell your partner, thank you very much. I know you're still talking and that's great, but we're going to do something else that you can still continue to process and you're going to love it. When you go back to your seat, I'm going to start around some strips of paper. Those strips of paper look like this, and there's something on the other side. Do not show your strip of paper to anyone. All right? Take one off the top and continue to pass it around. Sure. All right. I'm passing around little strips of paper that have information on them. Do not show your strip of paper to anyone. It's a secret. Can you read it? Can you read it? Yes. Great question. Yes. We're not going to put it on our head or anything like that. That's a good idea, though. But take your piece of paper and hold it close to your chest. Pass it back. All right. We are going to do something called humdingers to let you have a little tiny group to process with if you choose about your resentment or your whatever that defect was. Again, you can share if you choose to. So this is what you do. You look at your humdinger, and if you have, don't tell anybody, if you have happy birthday to you, you would go, so on. And you have to find others, and the groups can be as big as five. You are to find other humdingers who are in your group, and then you form a little group with your chairs, and then you, those who choose to, may share. Questions, oh, and I'll read them. The other day I did, if you had a hammer, and the teachers I was working with were all in their 20s, and nobody knew that one. So, yeah, you're too young. So happy birthday to you. Oh, let's read those together. Ready? Read. Happy birthday to you. Mary had a little lamb. Row, row, row your boat. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. And we wish you a Merry Christmas. I chose those because I think most of us know those. So I learned my lesson. Okay, questions on the activity? Take your writing with you and hum. Go.
We have to find support.
Oh, that's great.
1 minute warning. 1 minute. Tell your humdingers that that's a good note to end on. And what I'd like for you to do, if you so choose, is to get each other's contact information. So make a title that says humdingers. And one group is just passing around their papers so that everybody can write your own information on it. So much for participating and opening your hearts. You are welcome. My pleasure. We're going to close with the acceptance is the answer. I appreciate what you have shared today. As I've been around and listened to the groups, I am the beneficiary of all of what you've shared today. So thank you for opening your hearts. So I'll give you about 10 more seconds and then we'll do the acceptance. I hope you put humdinger at the top of your contact information so when you get back home and life happens and you want to make an outreach call, you'll be able to look at your list and go, oh, they were in my humdinger group. I remember who that was. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, or thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism or compulsive eating, I could not stay sober or abstinent. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. Thank you and God bless you. Thank you.